Here we go, February 22, 2009, lecture discussion number 81 on Genesis 1 through 19. And we last left our hero dangling from a cliff. Cliffside. Yeah, thank you. I'm not really sorry about that either. Seriously, here at Cliffside is not unlike, that's a double negative. Could have said, this is the same as or like.
I could have.
But I like double negatives. I can't resist them. I usually enjoy combining double negatives with similes. You know, like the sudden leprosy of Miriam is never not the same as the sudden leprosy of Gehazi. Now, I like to do that. And I do this kind of stuff, by the way, while everybody gets coffee, so you know that I'm a professional. Usually when I do the never not the same, which is a double negative in a simile, 3 to 4 within the congregation just drop, just bang, down they go. And it's really kind of cool if you wait 20 minutes before you do something like never not the same or not unlike, and they fall into a deep sleep. And it's quite powerful. The conjoining of double negatives and similes. Anyway, the bathroom fan needs WD-40. Anyway, here at Cliffside, it is not unlike the 1950s Western movie serials. The hero is in a predicament at the end of every one of those. No way to escape. How will he survive? Gasp. Right? Well, that's what we do here as well. At the end of every sermon, I try to leave a predicament. I do it. I actually do it on purpose. And that's my plan to get you all to come back next week and pays your money. I usually don't have to compete with Gracie Faith. This being an exception. Wow. Yes, he? Okay. Jeff is almost funny again. He's going to get a beating this time for that. At least he didn't. He could have made some comment about her weight. He didn't do that. He just says she's not thinking clearly. Well done. Okay. Thus, the Cliffside pattern, or my way of doing things. I grew up, as most of you know, 0 to 7. I played my first Little League game in Whittier, Alaska at age 6. And it was a military installation, Whittier was, and it was 10-cent movies. And I've learned really fast as I walked in Whittier, you went underground in the winter, but in the summer you walked up the hill to the Buckner Building. And I had my little dime about halfway through, of course. I'm 4 or 5 years old, and that was half a mile away. This is a great story about my brother pushing me in a baby stroller. I don't know if you've ever heard it, but he decides that I should ride in the baby stroller. He's about 5 and I'm 2, maybe 3. Let's change that. He's 5 and I'm 1. No, that won't work. Too many people are wise to that. But he's pushing me up this hill, and it's quite the hill. And his idea was that I would really enjoy riding down that hill. And I'm alive today because my father could drive that pickup truck fast enough to save me. That was his plan. And, yeah. That's not as bad as Christopher. Am I off to something? Christopher wanted to see what would happen if he held Eric's nose and put his hand over his mouth and threw him off the stairs. That's some good parenting right there, by the way. That's all true, isn't it? Yeah, oh, that's right. Eric got a pacifier in his mouth, so Christopher had to hold his nose closed. His mother taught him that. Didn't she, Jeff? No, I'm kidding. Anyway, 10-cent movies every Saturday, and I'd always lose my 10 cents. And because I was, or sometimes I just kept it, and I'd go up and pretend I didn't have it. And the military, being the military, always let me in. But it was a Western every Saturday, and it was always a serial, and always a dilemma. And you must come back, and you must find out what happens, and you must pay your 10 cents. And that was ingrained in me as a little kid. And Western serials made me a little mindless zombie consumer. Much like Madison Avenue does today to the teenagers. So it's only logical that I've incorporated the method, and that's absolutely the case. I do it on purpose. I every week try to leave some predicament, some dilemma, some unanswered thing that will make you think of it during the week and hopefully make you come back and ask me what it was. That is really what I do. It is a trick, but it is a purposeful one. My goal is to make you work these things out on your own without me. And all of that to say that we last left off with Miriam challenging the omniscience, the omnipresence, and the omnipotence of God. That's what number 12 is. Miriam challenging the omniscience, the omnipotence, and the omnipresence. And note that all three are intertwined, all three are interchangeable, all three are inseparable. Omniscience requires omnipresence. You can't know everything unless you are physically present everywhere. Omnipresence requires omnipotence, which requires omniscience, which requires omnipresent. And you can ponder that during the sermon. Well, but when you understand that they are three inseparable, intertwined, interchangeable things, you have a valuable piece of doctrine. And so whenever you read the New Testament, especially when you read about Christ, you should always remember, it's one of my rules for reading Scripture, omni, omni, omni. He is always sounds like an Australian cheer, doesn't it? It's not. Aussie, Aussie, Aussie. Omni, omni, omni. Whenever you read that, read the New Testament, remember Jesus Christ, omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent. So, Miriam was immediately leprous upon the departing of the pillar of cloud. If you remember Numbers 12 from last week and the week before. And that is very much similar, very much a reminding of Ezekiel 10, the departing of the Shekinah glory from the temple. So you can immediately say something. The departing of the Shekinah glory from the temple in Ezekiel 10 is probably for the exact same reason as the immediate leprosy of Miriam. And if you remember what was going on in Ezekiel 10, what were they doing? What was the nation of Israel? Who went through the Ezekiel class? Nobody. One, two. Wow, was it that long ago? Well, that was a silly question to ask you. But what they were doing, the priests were inside the holy place where no one could see, and they were putting essentially graffiti on the inside of the holy place, pretending to be priests, but in fact putting pagan symbols. What do I call that today, those pagan symbols? What is the relationship? What is the tabernacle of Moses or the tabernacle or the temple of Solomon? Don't you know you're a tabernacle? Yeah, absolutely right. Putting pagan symbols, don't you know you're a tabernacle on the tabernacle walls? And look, I get it. I understand it. I know that people do silly things and they are mindless consumer zombies made out that way by Madison Avenue, and it just happens. But you need to know that you are a tabernacle. And you need to understand that the Shekinah glory departed from the nation of Israel because of the actions of the priests inside of the tabernacle, the holy place. Thus we ask the obvious questions, which should be repeated, being that we answered, or that I answered only one. Which one did I answer last week of all the Miriam questions? What's that? I didn't answer why was she leprous. I did kind of. Kind of. What I answered was the father spit in the face one, right? Right? Which is the dead brother, the live brother, refusal to honor, to marry the widow of the dead brother, the sandal spit, the blotting out of the name, right? Everybody remember that? Cool. If you weren't here last week, don't worry. I will bring you back to it very quickly. Essentially, it is this. God makes a comment, I should spit in Miriam's face for what she has done. And the spit in the face takes you to the dead brother, and the live brother has to honor, should honor her, his widow, by marrying her in order to keep the name of the dead brother within the nation of Israel. Otherwise, it'll be blotted out, and there is a ceremony that occurs. And if he does not marry the wife of his dead brother or the widow of his dead brother, then she will throw her sandal at him and spit in his face because he has disgraced his brother. That's Deuteronomy 25. It's very important, Deuteronomy 25. And it is about disgrace, and that's the point I made. Miriam disgraced herself before God. And I concluded with this, sort of. To have a thought, much less a position, to have a precept, to teach, to think, to say that Jesus Christ, God in the flesh, is not omniscient. Which means you're also saying what else? That he's not omnipotent and he's not omnipresent, and you're absolutely right. He's not God. To say that he is not omniscient is a disgrace. You have disgraced yourself, and God will respond. He must respond. Why? Why does he care? Why not let you disgrace yourself? Why not just walk away? Or can God walk away, by the way? No, that would mean what? Yeah, he's not omnipresent, right? To have a position that Jesus Christ / God, same thing, in the flesh, is not omniscient is a disgrace. You've disgraced yourself. God will respond. The anger of the Lord will come. And that was essentially last Sunday's sermon. Why must he respond? Because of what? His love. For who? You have to know that. His mercy. Anyway, that was last week's sermon, and how long did that take today? 3 minutes? And I know what you're thinking. Why not a 3-minute sermon every week? And because, and this should be obvious, the reason we don't have a 3-minute sermon every week should be obvious. Most churchgoers need at minimum what? A 45-minute nap, at minimum. Especially on Sundays. And it's my utmost ambition to provide that for their health and safety. And I am unusually successful. Thank you for laughing. Before we move along now to the remaining Miriam questions, I was asked this during the week, and it fits here. It's a good place for it. I just am not going to be able to do it. I was asked to briefly explain Romans 12, 17 through 21. And boy, I thought, man, this is the place to do it. Miriam is the place to do it. But Romans 12, 17 through 21 essentially is this. Repay no one evil for evil. It is where God quotes, or says again, he's quoting himself, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. And then, of course, this other part of it. If it is possible, as much as it depends on you, live peaceably. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink. For in doing so, you will heap coals of fire on his head. And so I was asked, could I please explain the coals of fire and all of the vengeances. I don't know if you meant, I won't identify her, I'll just point. I don't know if you meant the vengeance is mine and all the rest of that, but you can't separate vengeance is mine, if it is possible, from if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink and heap coals of fire on his head. The problem with Romans 12, 17 through 21 is there's no such thing as briefly. There's no such thing as briefly in any part of Scripture, but Romans 12, 17 through 21 requires a very, very sophisticated collection of Old Testament pieces. And it's at minimum a 6-week lecture series, and so I can't do it today, but so you should know this. Proverbs 25, that's Solomon. He will explain the coals of fire and all of that to you. Matthew 5, 38 through 48, which is a part of the Sermon on the Mount, deals with it. Leviticus 19, 18, which is the eye for the eye. Mark 12, 28 through 34, where he says what the greatest commandment is, what the first commandment is. And after he tells them what the first commandment is, or the greatest commandment is, after that, no one dared to ask him anything. They were so stunned by his answer. Somebody asked him, as you know the story, what is the greatest commandment? And what does he respond? Love your neighbor. Love God. Love your neighbor. And no one dared ask him anything after that. And Deuteronomy 32:35 is the Song of Moses. Anyway, there's your list. To solve the heaping coals thing, why you put heaping coals on somebody's head by giving him a drink or giving him something to eat, that's Solomon, that's the Sermon on the Mount, that's the eye for an eye, that's the greatest first commandment, and that's the Song of Moses. That's what Deuteronomy is, the Song of Moses. There's two songs of Moses. Moses' eye? Never mind. But that's all you need in order to answer the obvious questions about Romans 12:17-21. Just four verses. All you need is five massive sections of the Bible to do it. So have a nice day there. And clearly we won't be doing this morning. However, I did think it would be good to ask the questions. Because usually when somebody wants to know about a passage and says something to me, there are 10 others who have the same interrogatives. And so first, when you get into that section, you have to have definitions. You have to define vengeance. He says, vengeance is mine. What does he mean by vengeance? What is his definition of vengeance? And then you have to ask these, why is vengeance God's? Why is he the only one that can have it? Don't we have it? Vengeance is mine. It's his alone. When is his vengeance? Exactly. When does his vengeance take place? How does his vengeance take place? Why is his vengeance? And then that incredible statement there. If it is possible, live at peace with all men. What's the implication there? It's not always possible. So what's the obvious questions? When is it possible? When is it not possible? When is it not possible to live at peace with all men? I have two places. Little League, churches. That's where all the fights are. Politics. The same as Lily. If it is possible, be at peace. Wow. What happens when it's not possible? Who decides it's not possible? What's the definition of not possible? Against whom is God going to take his vengeance? And then this, what do the burning coals represent? Am I really going to put burning coals on somebody's head if I give them a drink of water? No, so they're clearly a symbol, aren't they? A symbol of what? Because it doesn't seem to make sense. And that's our first clue that something profound is hidden here. If you can't figure it out immediately, if it doesn't make sense to you, you're in great shape. That means a treasure is there. And it's very, very important to take your time and go through it carefully. And it's very, very important to understand all the terms before you begin. So now you're going to have to decide what hungry means and what thirsty means. Becca, are you getting your dad something to drink or something to eat? Oh, a napkin, not the same. Too bad. There was a chance for real comedy there. Oh, did you spill something? Okay, that's some bad parenting, isn't it? There we go. And that's Bill's fault there. And he took vengeance. Okay, it's very important to understand all the terms. It really is. And to ask exactly, why are they thirsty? How'd they get thirsty? What made them thirsty? Where are they that they're thirsty, that they've come along to ask you for a drink? They're your enemy. Let's just make the personal application. Right now, is anybody thirsty? Yes. The answer is yes. Yes. They're dying of thirst. They're dying of hunger. How did that happen? They're your enemy and they're dying. That's what that means. And they're so desperate that what have they done? They came to you for food and for water. What does giving food and drink have to do with heaping burning coals upon your enemy's head? Setting his head on fire doesn't seem like a really good idea. That's why it's such a great treasure. By setting his head on fire, how is that peaceful? Normally, and by the way, how do I do that? What's it require to set his head on fire? With burning coals. What do I need first? I need burning coals. Now I got to get him to cooperate. Here, stand here while I pour these burning coals on your head. Have at least a glass of water. Piece of bread. I always thought Kingsford, because that's always my image of burning coals. So the first thing with Kingsford is what?
The lighter fluid, yeah.
Oh, here's a coal. That's my image, and that goes back to Bill's question, were you weird before you came here, or did Cliffside make you weird? I was telling Linda and George today that people, I was in a meeting, and they asked me how I liked the 11:30 service, and I said, you know, I'm definitely different at 11:30. Have you noticed? But I'm definitely different. I feel different. Part of it is that I've had something to eat. Believe it or not, I do my little exercises before I come here, and it's 11:30, because, you know, I'm usually completely done with the sermon, except for what I do here, way earlier now. I can't wait till October when I get the extra hour, right? All right, two sermons. I'll have a 3-hour sermon on that day. Wow. Everyone cheers. But how exactly does one heat coals of fire on someone's head? What is the anatomy, the steps? First off, coals of fire is a term for judgment. That's what it is. God's judgment. If you will, God's vengeance. Coals of fire is God's judgment. And then define enemy. Who is your enemy? How did he become your enemy? What is the condition of your enemy? He's dying is the condition of your enemy. And once all of that is worked out, then your providence, Proverbs 25, Deuteronomy 32, Matthew 5, Mark 12, Leviticus 19, fall neatly into place. It's a piece of pie, easy as cake. So there you go. Did I answer any of those questions? No. That's what? A cliffhanger, a dilemma, a predicament. Because I'm not going to do it today. I'll make up a sermon pretty soon on it, and perhaps I'll combine it with a dead brother, living brother, widow, sandals, fit, refusal to marry, blind, not the name sermon. Or I won't. Anyway. Turn to Numbers 12. I can't reread it again, but turn to Numbers 12, and we'll kind of pick at it, and this will give you a chance to kind of read it while we're picking at certain parts of it. It's too much to read, but we're just going to deal with a little bit, and we're going to finish with a couple of more questions. We'll knock off a few of them if we can, and we'll have to figure out which ones it will be. I could define the anger of the Lord. We could come up with the question or answer the question, why didn't Aaron turn leprous? Because they both seem to be guilty. Only Miriam turns leprous, white as snow. Aaron doesn't. They both seem to be involved. They both seem to deserve white as snow leprosy. They both should have got it, but only Miriam did. Why is it? How come Aaron got a pass? Do you know why? Because men are better than women. I just wanted to join with Jeff in his beating for later on. Obviously, that's not the case. What is it that Aaron has done or is doing or will do that is different than what Miriam did? Why did Miriam take the hit here? Alone. Seems alone. Is it alone? Is Miriam taking it completely alone? Answer, yeah. She got the full-blown leprosy. So that question, we'll take that one on, I think. Why did the nation of Israel wait 7 days before they moved? They're about to go into a military campaign. They don't go into it, but they're about to. And they got things to do. And they shut down for 7 days while we wait for Miriam. And what is the relationship between Miriam's turning white, the sign of Moses' hand turning white, and Gehazi turning white? Because clearly the three of them make what? Every time you see three wonderful things like that, think of the arcs. How many arcs I got? How many arcs? I have three arcs. I have the Ark of the Covenant. I have the Testimony. You know, the movie, right? The Ark of the Covenant. I got the Ark of Moses, because he's floating in the Ark, little basket, right? And I have the Ark of Noah. I put the three of them together, I will get a whole. One will save you from the Pharaoh, right? One will protect you from the law. One will protect you from the judgment. Two have blood on them. Kafar is the word for blood, the pitch that is on the outside of the Ark of Noah. Blood is on top of the mercy seat. So you have those. The relationship between those three tell you of a redemptive function of the person of Christ. Same thing will happen here with Miriam, Moses, and Gehazi. Explain Leviticus 13:13. Very important. We've got to do that. The departing Shekinah glory. Why does the Shekinah glory depart on and then Miriam get hit? Why does the Shekinah glory depart? And notice I called the pillar of cloud the Shekinah glory. And that's absolutely appropriate to do so. Why does the Shekinah glory leave on Miriam and leave at Ezekiel 10? Is Aaron blaming Moses? It seems kind of like Aaron says to Moses, don't do this to us. Is Aaron blaming Moses? Answer that for me. Is Aaron blaming Moses? I'll read it. So Aaron said to Moses, because Miriam just turned white, she's a leper, oh my Lord, please do not lay this sin on us. Aaron blaming Moses? What's the answer? Why? It's a great answer. You got a 50-50 chance. But no is absolutely correct. But I want to know why you think so. Yes. His language clearly tells you he's not. Plus, he's also not white as snow. Yeah. He got a pass. He's not blaming Moses. And you read the rest of it, it's pretty obvious. Please do not let her be as one dead. We have done foolishly and we have sinned. Anyway, he's not blaming Moses. So which one do we answer? And being that I hold the holy dry erase marker and I am positioned behind the holy music stand and I'm upon this purple and green and pink and black. Oh, yes. It used to hold pianos, by the way, in case you think that some craftsman made it for the church. It isn't. I'm going to pick define anger, because that, I believe, is the most important. And if you read, let's read 12, 8, and 9. I speak with him face to face, even plainly and not in dark sayings. And he sees the form of the Lord. God is talking about Moses. He says, look, the other prophets, I come to them in visions and dreams, not Moses. Moses is what? He's different. If God highlights somebody out and said, this person is different, then what do you now know about him? Yeah, he's special. Why is he special? Is it because he deserves to be special? He's done a really good job. He's a particularly good student and he sits in the front row and he laughs at the pastor's jokes. Is that why? No. It is because of whom he represents. I speak with him face to face, even plainly, not in dark sayings, and he sees the form of the Lord. Why were you not afraid to speak out, or to speak against my servant Moses? And then the key word of the whole thing is what? Coming next. What is that word? Say it. So. Because you were not afraid. Because you spoke out against Moses, the anger of the Lord was aroused against them and he departed. And as soon as he departs, bam, Miriam's leprous, white as snow. So there's your order. And then, of course, naturally, by defining anger of the Lord, what does it mean by anger of the Lord? What is your definition? You have to have the correct definition of anger of the Lord. It goes back to what I originally asked. What page was that? God will respond. And the anger of the Lord. Why wasn't Aaron also not suddenly leprous? We'll solve it when we solve anger. Once we get a good definition of anger, we'll solve them both at the same time. They're obviously connected. Now, defining the anger of the Lord, or the wrath of the Lord, or the response of the Lord, or the coming of the Lord in judgment, or the holiness of the Lord is very important. Very important to have the right definition when you read it. Every time you read a statement like, and the anger of the Lord was aroused, or the anger of the Lord came, or the anger of the Lord occurred, every time you read it, you have to mentally, if you will, put the correct definition in. Otherwise, you'll fall mistake, or you'll fall prey to a common mistake. Plus, we're going to have to answer this great question of Numbers 12:8. Why were you not afraid to speak against? And from the context, by the way, of all of it, it's apparent that Moses acts on Miriam's behalf. How does he do it? What does he do? He intercedes. Aaron says something to him, and Moses acts and intercedes. I brought up last week, why should he do it? Is Miriam his enemy? And what's happening to her? She's dead. And now you see why it's Romans 12, right? Miriam is dead. Why doesn't Moses go, serves you right? It's not very much different than the brother holding the nose while the pacifier pushing the other brother down Buckner Hill. He will admit, by the way, and though he's never been prosecuted, that he had every intention of killing me. I don't know if it's a statute of limitations problem. I really don't know. I don't know if he would have got out at 18 because it was a juvenile offense, but he should have served. Never mind. He should have served something. The great question here, Numbers 12:8, why were you not afraid to speak against? Powerful question. From the context, it is apparent that Moses interceded on Miriam's behalf. Thus, Miriam and Aaron are speaking against the one who will intercede on their behalf. They are speaking against the intercessor, aren't they? They are speaking against this one that God has said, you should be afraid to do this because I speak to him plainly. He doesn't hear dark sayings. He sees the form. Face to face, you should be afraid because of who he represents. Miriam and Aaron are speaking against the intercessor. Miriam is healed by the prayer of the intercessor, though she is cut off for a time, though she has disgraced herself. Though she is cut off for a time and has disgraced herself, she still has an intercessor. So now begin to put all those pieces together. Cut off for a time, should have been dead, is not dead, has an intercessor, disgraced herself. And Israel doesn't move. Because she was not afraid to speak against Moses. And Moses, Deuteronomy 18:15, people ask me all the time, every time I used to get asked a lot more than lately, but occasionally I had this guy that called me from the Daily News every time there's something happened, and he always wanted me to go in the paper and identify myself, and I was far too wise for that mistake. But he called me all the time when we were in the other building, and he'd ask me questions, and one of the questions he'd always bring up is, what is your favorite verse in the Bible? Now, there it is. Deuteronomy 18:15. And he'd ask me, well, what's that about? And I'd say, look it up. Dilemma, predicament, you know. One time he called me up and he said, I did finally look up Deuteronomy 18:15. It makes no sense to me at all. And I went, that's because there's a great treasure there. She's not afraid to speak against Deuteronomy 18:15. Moses is obviously a portrait, a dim shadow here, as in all of it. Look, Moses says in Deuteronomy 18:15, Holy Spirit through Moses. There's great studies about Moses. They found 500, 600, 700 times in the Old Testament, which is essentially only five books of Moses, where Moses is a portrait of Christ. He is the great portrait of Christ in the Old Testament. Here, he is the great intercessor. He is the great mediator. He is Jesus Christ himself here, is who he is portraying. The type, Moses, the anti-type or the fulfillment, Jesus himself. Therefore, Numbers 12:8 can be then amplified to its final meaning, can't it? Why were you not afraid to speak against Deuteronomy 18:15? Why were you not afraid to speak against the prophet of whom Moses is a type, like unto me, Moses says. Look for someone like unto me. When you see someone who takes my life, the elements in my life, and fulfills them, that is who? That is the face-to-face. That is the form that I see. That is the one who speaks to me plainly. That is God himself. That is the I am. Why are you not afraid to speak against Jesus Christ? Now, consider for a second the national implications of that. How many nations are speaking against Jesus Christ? Well, all of them. Some more vehemently than others. This is one of the few nations that tries not to occasionally. But also think of it individually, or the personal implications, or the individual application. Jesus Christ in my lifetime has long been an epithet. It's a curse word. I've always been fascinated by that. Why are you? Had a friend, we worked together, we wrote a book together, How to Make $10 in Contracting, over 100 years. Dickie Schooler, great guy, wonderful man, and he used to always say, where is the fear of God? Essentially the same question. No one ever curses with some other person's name. It is always Jesus Christ, isn't it? Why such hatred for the mediator? Because he is the only one who can save us from death. Why such hatred? Why are we not afraid of him? Why are we not afraid? What are we, you know, there's no fear. And he says, Matthew 28, don't fear physical death. Don't fear people who kill you physically. Fear who? Fear me. Who am I? I'm the one who can destroy. I can bring destruction to the soul. I can place the soul into a place of destruction. What is required for that? What's required? What is placing the soul into a, what is putting the soul into a place of destruction? What is that? Why does he do it? It's called what? I almost heard it. Be aggressive. Judgment. Very good, Linda. Linda gets an A. Is these yours from last week? No, okay. I don't want you to take somebody else's. It's judgment. Fear the one who can judge and place the soul into destruction or place the soul into resurrection and eternal life. See, what is required for this destruction? What attribute? He must be able to judge each and every human being. That requires what? Omniscience. That's right. Judgment requires omniscience. Righteousness. And there's your answer as to why only Miriam is a leprous. Because Moses is Deuteronomy 18:15, a prophet like unto me. See? There's your answer. And Aaron knows something, confesses great truth. Aaron does the absolutely perfect, correct thing, if you will. He says the perfect, correct thing. This is where we write, yay, Aaron. He does really good. Anyway, back to the definition of the anger of God. Got to hurry now. Don't make the common mistake of anthropomorphism, assigning our sinful anger, our human anger, to God. He has no sin. His ways are not our ways. He is not petulant. He is not selfish. He's not capricious. He's not erratic. He's not vindictive. He's not a two-year-old trying to get his way. I'm going to kill that guy. I'm going to kill that guy. I'm going to shoot the... That's not what he is. That is how he is represented, however, in our popular media today. But he is not that way, and don't make that mistake. That mistake is what? Disgraceful. Because you are denying his omniscience. Think about it. You'll figure out why. He is omniscient. He sees all things. He knows all things throughout time. He's outside of time. He sees what happens when Miriam does this. He sees how it goes this way, how it goes that way, how it goes every way. He's omniscient. He is righteous, he's holy, he's loving, and he is purposed. That's why I love this discussion on, is the universe purposed? Well, they figured out the universe has a purpose. You know how they figured it out? They figured it out, it has a purpose because they can predict what it's going to do. If it's purposeless, your science is useless. If it is just an erratic happenstance, then why study it? You can't study it. You can't figure it out. But you can figure it out. It has a purpose. How to get a purpose? He's righteous, holy, loving, and purposed. Remember that when reading verses like Numbers 12:9 or Exodus 4:14. What is Exodus 4:14? It is, by the way, very much like Numbers 12:9. The difference is no leprosy, which is odd, I thought. See, Exodus 4:14 is where Moses has all these excuses. God says, you're going to go into Egypt, you're going to get people to Egypt, you're my guy, right? And Moses says, I'm not eloquent, I'm slow of speech, I'm slow of tongue. And by the way, God is not impressed by man's great swelling words of emptiness. 2 Peter 2:18. He's not impressed. He likes people that are slow of speech, not eloquent, slow of tongue. He does not value clanging bells who are gifted speakers. Exodus 4:14, very similar to Numbers 12:9. Both places has the anger of the Lord. One was kindled against Moses, the other was aroused against Miriam. Very similar. Why was God angry at Moses for saying, I'm slow of tongue, I'm not eloquent, I can't speak good, you take somebody else? Why is he mad about that? His anger is aroused, kindled towards Moses. Moses said essentially, oh, my Lord, please, what? Pick somebody else. Send somebody. Don't send me. What's he saying to God? You're making a wrong choice. What? What are you sending me for? Don't pick me. You're wrong. Pick somebody else. You can do better. You haven't thought it through. You don't. Know what you're doing. You're not omniscient. And the anger of the Lord was aroused against Moses, or kindled against Moses. So now what does that mean? Why did he just blow Moses up then? Because that's not what anger means, you see. There's two key words. I'll go to it. You don't have to go to it. I'll just read it to you really fast. I'm going to make it. Trust me. I started late. Food's still hot. Moses said to the Lord, oh, my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither before nor since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. So the Lord said to him, who has made man's mouth? Who makes the mute, the deaf, the seeing, or the blind? Have not I the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what to say. Ooh, let me put that word on the board. I will teach you what to say. Teach. I will teach you what to say. Notice the word teach. But, he said, Moses, oh my Lord, please send by the hand of whomever else you may send. Pick anybody out. Don't take me. I don't want to be what? I don't want to be taught. You don't know what you're doing. I can't cut it. And then this great word, so. Just like Miriam. Cause and effect. If then, so the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. So what should you expect now? Leprosy, or dead, or mute, or maybe a frog. He turns into a frog. Some kind of, yeah. And he said, I'm running out of time, I know. And he said, is not Aaron, this is God, so the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, is not Aaron the Levite your brother? And I added my own anthropomorphism there, didn't I? It may sound like he was like me, he's human. Is not Aaron the Levite your brother? I know that he can speak well, and look, he is also coming out to meet you. How did God know that? I'm glad you're laughing. When he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. How did God know that? Duh. Now you shall speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and with his mouth, and I will teach you what you shall do. So he shall be your spokesman to the people, and he himself shall be as a mouth for you, and you shall be to him as Deuteronomy 18:15. I'll read it better. And you shall be to him as God. Hence my story of my brother trying to push me down the hill and kill me. Think about that. You shall be to your brother Aaron as God. Now, did that happen? Where did it happen? Numbers 12. The two key phrases, I will teach you, and you shall be to Aaron as God. And there, that completely solves why Aaron was not turned leprous. Again, easy as cake, piece of pie, we're all done. It also defines anger. How does God define anger? How does he do it? Did you notice that God does not strike Moses dead or leprous or mute or lame? What's he say? I will teach you. The anger, the wrath of the Lord is what? It is teaching. It is doctrinal correction. It is truth. It is understanding. He is intervening for the sake of who? Us. It's love. It's protection. When Miriam decides that God is omniscient, he calls her and Aaron out in front of the entire nation of Israel. Why? Is he mad at Miriam? He loves Miriam. What's he doing? He's got a whole group of people there that are doing what? Oh, well, maybe Miriam's right. Maybe God, maybe we can just get rid of Moses and go to Miriam. Hey, let's all think about it. Maybe we can take a cow. Let's have a cow. Where's it at? It is protection. It is correction. It is truth. It is understanding. It is love for those that are watching and listening. Intervention is love and mercy. Does he do it in very dramatic ways? Yes. What is leprosy? It's a symbol. He turns her into a symbol for something. What is it a symbol of? Corruption, of sin. Miriam is turned leprous because she is who? To the nation of Israel. Moses is Christ. He is praying and interceding. It is the first advent. It is the flaming torch aspect of Christ. It is Genesis 15. It is Gethsemane. And that's what Moses is doing. We are getting a lesson. The whole nation of Israel is getting a lesson. He's teaching. He's correcting. He's giving doctrinal understanding and truth. Why is he doing it? Does he have to? Why bother? That's the key question. See, that solves it. Why even go through the process? Why not just leave them? God doesn't. Aaron is the one who confesses his sin, knows that Christ is God, knows that Christ alone can, will, and save the foolish. Aaron understands Deuteronomy 18:15. To him, Moses is acting as God. That's why he's not turned leprous. Yes, sir. Yeah, if you mean you're a husband of blood to me, yes, he does. Yes, he does. Miriam doesn't. But that's another complicated thing. That is Zipporah. And many people ask, that's why Mike got to Zipporah, because many people have the position that the Ethiopian woman that started all of this is Zipporah. Let's rise and be dismissed.